Welcome to the Bedtime for Brickleys podcast, a podcast for Brickley kids who are supposed to be asleep, but are not quite sleepy yet. I think I can help with that. I am your host and also your dad. On today's episode, I want to take you through the years of 0 to 10 when I was a kid. I'll tell you about my earliest memories, some of the different houses we lived in, just a few. I couldn't possibly ever tell you all of the memories, all of the stories that happened, but I can tell you a few that'll give you an idea of what I was doing when I was your age. I can remember things. I'll try and come up with a story for each one of your ages, so 4 to 9 years old at the time of this recording. And you guys need to try and fall asleep, okay? I am here to help you fall asleep. You're getting very sleepy. I think it worked. Are they asleep? I think. Oh, nope. Nope. I heard some giggling. I don't think they're asleep yet. Well, I'll keep talking then. So I don't remember much when I was 0, but I do have my earliest memory is kind of like a weird movie scene where I didn't know what it meant for a long time, but I can remember feeling very high up in the air and crawling across this dangerous bridge. And across the dangerous bridge, there were people that I knew, and they were playing a game, like a board game. And I remember Caleb Jennison's face, my brother Jonathan's face, and Caleb's little brother Enoch's face. And that's it. So high up in the air, crawling across a dangerous bridge of doom, and then carpet, and seeing a few people that I knew around a board game. So later on, I found out that that actually was a real, I had that memory for a long time, but I didn't know if it was real. I assumed it was just made up. But when I started telling it to people, once we were a little older, maybe around Clara's age, when you have conversations with people where they're like, what's your earliest memory? And some people can't remember even things before they were like 5 years old. But I can remember a lot from when I was, I even have memories from 2, 3, 4 years old. But then there's this one memory, and I didn't know if it was made up or not, but when I started explaining it to people, they said, well, that's our house at the lake. We had a spiral staircase that went up to a landing, and then, which is what I was remembering as the scary bridge. And then there was a little loft area where the kids would go and play. And the kids did often play board games. So the crazy part about that story is that I was probably not quite 1, maybe 1.5 when we moved from that house. And obviously I wouldn't have gone back to the house after we moved as a baby. Would have been super awkward. They hear a little tiny knock on the door. They open it up. They look around. Nobody's there. All of a sudden they hear something at their feet. It's the baby coming back to visit the house. No, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. So at the oldest, maybe 18 months, but a real memory from when I was a baby. And then I don't really have anything for another year or so. I can remember, I would have been about 3 years old, maybe 2, probably 3. I can remember wanting my mom, you know her as Grandma Kiss. My mom would make these tortilla roll-ups that had, all they had in them was deli ham and butter. And we would microwave them and eat them. I still love them to this day. We need to make them. But for some reason, she made a bunch of them and then froze what we didn't eat. So I remember for a long time, we would thaw out these little snack foods and eat them. And I was hungry. I went into the kitchen in the freezer. I pulled one of those out and I went in to try and ask her to warm it up for me. Because obviously I didn't know how to use the microwave. And she was talking to a friend. Somebody was visiting in our living room. And she said, not now, Tyler. I'm talking to so-and-so. So I had to leave. And I don't remember all these details. I just remember I needed mom's help with the frozen tortilla. I went in. She I couldn't talk to her then. And I came back in the kitchen and I just cried and cried and cried. I was so sad. And I started to eat the frozen tortilla because that was the only option that I had. And my mom heard me crying and came in, and I'm sitting there eating a frozen ham and butter tortilla. And she laughed and she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I needed this for, you know, heated up, and but you were in there and I couldn't, you told me I couldn't come talk to you." So that story is highly embellished because obviously 2-year-olds can't speak like that, but that's the memory. The memory is me communicating to mom, "I need this food." She was busy. I went back in. I started to just make do and eat it frozen. She came in, was very friendly, warm, laughed. She thought it was a silly moment and helped me warm it up. And then I ate the rest of it. But I think about that story a lot with you guys because we never know as parents, the tiniest little insignificant moment could become something that you remember and draw on 30 years later. And I do draw on that. I think about you guys when you have something that is insignificant to me or feels big, but I remember even those feelings, even at 2 or 3 years old, I remember it being such an overwhelming amount of sadness because my mom wasn't able to help me get the thing that I needed at the time. So that was when we lived at the building. You know, the apartment building that John and Lizzie live at now. Well, I lived there after this lake house where I had this baby memory. We moved to the building and I lived there until I'm gonna say I was probably 5. Dates and times are a little bit hard for me, so if you're checking the records on this later in life, please be gentle. But I was still very small when we lived at the building. I do have some memories, though. I have memories of Dad putting a ladder on the wall and cutting a hole in the ceiling and making a loft. What is it with Grandpa Johnny and lofts? I think he really likes making lofts. I remember having a bucket on my head. I was in a nap time and I had a little plastic beach bucket and I got it stuck on my head and I was banging it around on the sides of the crib and my family had to come rescue me. I'm surprised they didn't call me Buckethead from then on. They should have. Old Buckethead Brickley. I'm guessing it's just because they didn't. I was going to say maybe they were nice, but let's be honest. The Brickley family, sarcasm, nicknames, come on. If they had thought of it, they would have called me that for sure. I remember boxing nights. I think I mainly remember boxing nights because it's on our home videos. Whenever we would watch the Rocky, anything from the Rocky franchise, we'd get out the boxing gloves. We had boxing gloves. How weird is that? We don't have any boxing gloves, but my family had boxing gloves at the time. And we would get those out and do fake boxing matches. And those are special memories for me because my dad would play with us. And those are some of the only times that I remember my dad playing like silly games with us. He did a lot, like when we were older, you know, like he would pull us on the ski boat or, you know, take us camping and do different things like that. But in terms of just playing silly games and making up funny voices or dress ups or wrestling, those years from 3 to 6 or so were really special to me. And I have tried. I always think about my dad whenever I am wrestling with you guys. I'm usually thinking about my dad and thinking about, you know, this could be something that my kids remember a long time from now. And I see the smiles on your guys' faces and I think that that's probably what's happening. So we moved from the building to what we called the shop. And you guys probably have never seen the shop. That was during a time when my parents, the oil industry wasn't doing great and my parents were really struggling with money. And yet they had 5 kids at the time. So there was a lot of food to buy, a lot of neon and tie-dye clothes to get from Goodwill. And bills to pay, and it was hard. And so they moved into the front of a warehouse building. Trying to think of what to compare it to. If you can think of the Hatfields shop, not Shem and Noel's, Shem's parents, Fritzy and Mark's shop. If you guys can think of that, that's kind of what that big building was like. It was basically just a big barn, but there was a giant parking lot next to it, and that's where Dad's company would park their oil field trucks. And there was a shop in the back. It's the AJ's shop. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I don't know if you guys have ever been to the AJ's shop. That is right now in El Dorado. But there's a big garage in the back where they pull all of their dirty, oily trucks in when they break. And they lift them up and they fix them and they get them back on the road. Well, in the front of the AJ shop, there's offices. But if you can imagine, instead of offices, a big open living room, a little cubicle divided section to the left when you walk in the door that had 2 twin beds, and that was where the kids slept for the most part. There was a kitchen that was all part of one room. That's interesting. Really, the only thing separating the room was furniture. There wasn't walls. It was just a giant open room, and there were couches and a TV right to the right when you walked in. There were some beds to the left. You kept going, you kind of ran into the linoleum that was the kitchen floor. That's how you knew you were in the kitchen. And I believe it was to the left. In the back left corner, Mom and Dad had a bedroom and a bathroom back there. And then there was a door at the very back that would connect to the shop. So we were only there for a few years. I do have a lot of really good memories of the shop. One was looking for kittens. And this is something that we did a lot growing up, but that was the first time that I could ever remember going kitten hunting. Ellie would have been you would have been a master kitten hunter. But how it worked was you'd have a cat, and mama cat, and you could tell that she was pregnant because she would balloon up and she would look like she had had too many Chipotle burritos, but you knew there were little kittens in there, sometimes 7 or 8 little baby kittens. And she would get so pregnant that we all knew she was going to have have her babies any day. So what we would do most of the day, every time we woke up, we'd just immediately go and try and find the mama cat. And if she would still be big and pregnant, we'd say, "Ah, shucks, she hasn't had him yet." But then it was kind of like a little bit of a fake Christmas, the day that you would wake up and you would go find her, and she'd be walking around and she's just skinny. She looks like a balloon that's popped, and you're like, "Ah," and you freak out. And you know, you can play, you got a choice at that point. You can play it one of two ways. You can do what most of us did, which is freak out and run and tell the rest of the family, "Callie's had her kittens. Mama Cat's had her kittens." Or if you were a little more sneaky, you could not tell the rest of the family if you saw that and go try and find the kittens first. Now, that only happened a few times. Most of the time, we'd make it a group event. But the rule was we would all go look for kittens. Sometimes we'd look together. Sometimes we'd split up. The rule was whoever found the kittens got to pick the first kitten. So got their pick of the litter, which is the phrase associated with that activity. And that happened to me several times. I was the first one to find the litter. Sometimes I was the second or third one to find the litter. And it was sad, but it was always fun to, you know, how it would work was if there were 5 or 6 kittens, everybody would kind of get to pick one. And then you get to name it. And then that thing kind of becomes your buddy. And we would all have one that we more or less, probably less, took care of and more just hung out with. So there's definitely more memories at the shop, but that one kind of sticks out. I remember us dancing to 1950s songs in the living room. I remember us playing The Floor is Lava. We played that a lot. Oh, we built forts. So we had these old gray couches that had these square cushions on the bottom and the back. And so they made awesome fort building cushions. The couches we have right now are terrible fort building couches. And that's on purpose. So sorry, kids. But these were great, and we could stack them up. We could make tunnels. We could build giant walls and put blankets over the top. We had a lot of fun building forts. When we played The Floor is Lava, I can remember we had these cardboard bricks that were, they were about the size of a shoebox, and we had probably 50 of them, and we would stack those up and build little brick houses that you could tear down if you wanted. I never remember feeling poor during that time either, but looking back, I could see that we were. There were a couple times when I thought it was just Dylan's had a delivery service, and they would bring our groceries to us because we would get home from some church event and there'd be 3 or 4 bags of groceries on our front porch. I'm like, "Oh, look, Dylan's brought us the groceries this time." And I never thought much about that. But looking back, my parents have shared stories with me about some nice friends of theirs who, when we didn't have very much money, they actually just brought us food and would just, they have a pretty good idea who it was, but nobody ever fessed up to it and was just bringing us food to be nice because they knew we had a lot of kids and not a ton of money. So, but I never remember feeling like we were missing anything. We didn't have iPads or Chromebooks or a VR headset or an Xbox. We had a VCR and a TV, but other than that, we just played with each other and we fought, you know, and would get angry with each other and have temper tantrums and get sent to our rooms or get spanked or whatever. But overall, I look back on our time at the shop and just remember a lot of fun things with Jonathan and Andy, Missy and Molly. That was before Uncle Ryan and Aunt Hannah and Hope were even born. Uncle Ryan was born when we lived at Teeter Road. So after a few years in the shop, my dad told us that we were moving. He said there was a little house that we were going to rent, and it was out just outside of town, but he had to fix it up first. So it was a couple months, I believe. I specifically remember a couple weeks at the end. I think he was working on it for a couple months to get it fixed up. But I remember seeing it before we moved in, and it seemed like about 100 years old. There were wasp nests everywhere. The walls were terrible. There wasn't any, you know, the electricity was bad. I can remember just going in, Mom just took all the kids out there to visit Dad while he was working. And I can remember him taking Jonathan and maybe Andy, but I think especially Jonathan, several times. And I didn't feel like left out, but I just remember that he took Jonathan to help him fix up the house several times, and the rest of us stayed with Mom. But then after a while, it was time for us to move in, and it was so exciting. We were so excited because at this location, it was about 3 miles outside of town. There were several ponds, but one was a big, big pond, and then several little ponds. There were trees all around the house. There were probably 4 or 5 other buildings around the house that were just old barns and things for us to explore in. And then there were fields all around with more ponds and nature, a creek, different things for us to go and explore. You know, riding bikes. We had a dirt bike later on, three-wheeler, go-karts. It was so, so much fun. But that house, it's weird to look back on now that I'm an adult, because that house was about as big as the upstairs at our house, like our living room, dining room, kitchen. It was probably only a little bit bigger than that. And there was one bedroom in it and one bathroom. So 5 kids until Ryan was born, one bedroom and one bathroom. Oh, but that's not true, because there was a toilet in their room, in the master bedroom, just a toilet in the corner. And there was a bathtub and a toilet and a sink upstairs. It really wasn't much of an upstairs, but it was more of an attic that Dad hollowed out. And the ceilings were only about 6 feet tall at the middle, and then it kind of sloped down from there. And we had mattresses up there. So for a couple years at first, we all just kind of, a couple would sleep on the mattresses, a couple would sleep on the floor beside the mattresses. I think maybe Jonathan slept on the couch downstairs. And then after a while, Dad and Jonathan and Andy remodeled one of the buildings outside the house and kind of made that into its own bedroom. We called it the bunkhouse. Jonathan and Andy lived in there for a while. I lived in there for just a few months, I think. before we ended up moving to Burns. But that is probably a story for the next episode, because this episode is just 0 to 10 years old. And we moved to Burns when I was 12. So many memories, as many memories as I have in the 3 or 4 houses that we lived in before the house on Teeter Road, I probably have 5 times that memory just from Teeter Road. And I couldn't possibly tell you all of them, but I'll tell you a few. I'm pretty sure I saw Santa Claus at the house on Teeter Road. Christmas Eve. I think we opened a couple presents. We all go to bed. Mom and Dad say goodnight. Well, it's late. I'm laying there. Everybody's asleep, but I'm still awake because I'm so excited. And I can't fall asleep because tomorrow's going to be Christmas and there's going to be presents under the tree. And who knows what's going to be in them. And it's in the middle of the night. And I kid you not, I heard footsteps on our roof. Like, just boom, boom, just above me. And I was like freaked out, but also I was so excited because I knew it was Santa Claus. Who else would be on the roof, you know? And right after that, I saw the lights on our Christmas tree turn on. I couldn't see the tree, but I could see the staircase, and it was dark downstairs. But then all of a sudden, all these beautiful colored lights and flashing things, you know, I saw the reflections and the light kind of glow come up the stairs. And I knew it. It was Santa. He had been on the roof, and then he came inside, he turned on the lights, and he left his toys. And pretty soon after that, Mom came up and I told her the whole thing, and she said, okay, well, it's all right. I think you need to go to sleep and we'll check it all out in the morning. So of course, the Christmas morning was like any other Christmas morning. We'd all scream and run downstairs and open presents, and it was a great time. But I'll never forget hearing Santa on the roof and seeing the lights come on in the middle of the night. There's so many animal stories that I could tell you from when we were out at Teeter Road. A lot more kitten hunts. That was definitely a thing. Multiple times per year, we'd have a pregnant mama cat, and we'd keep an eye on her until she had her babies. Then we could tell the next day, oh, she had her babies. And we'd all sneak, you know, because the mama cat, they try and hide their babies. And I didn't tell you this earlier, but they don't, you know, they're not going to just have them on the back porch because babies are defenseless, right? So the mama cat wants to go find a secret place to have her babies in so that they'll be safe while they grow up, you know, and are able to defend themselves a little bit. So it usually was the rafters of a barn or just someplace really hard to get to. And Mama Cat was super sneaky with not wanting to show us where that spot was. So we would keep an eye on her when she had her babies, and then we'd try and follow her, you know, to go back to where the kittens were. And sometimes it was hard. Because she would, you know, she didn't always go straight back to where the kittens were. I think that she knew we were following her and she was trying to throw us off. But it was always fun. You'd find those little rats and the little mews that they make. Super cute. My sister Molly would almost always name one Callie. I think she had 3 or 4 different kittens named Callie. I had one at Teeter Road that was the darkest black, silky, smooth, short hair cat that I named Bagheera. off of the Black Panther from the Jungle Book, and I called it Baggy for short, which isn't quite as complimentary as Bagheera, but what did I know at the time? At Teeter Road, one of the first days that we were there, my dad took us down to the big pond, and he said, "Do you see that frog?" And I said, "No, I don't." It was me and my brothers. And he said, "Look," and he held up his hand and he said, "Look where my shadow is." And way down the bank, right at the edge of the water, the shadow of his hand pointed right to the biggest frog that I have ever seen in my life. I mean, I'm telling you guys, this frog was like a basketball with legs. And we freaked out, and we tried to go get him, but of course he jumped away. And that's one thing that I remember about that pond. It was so big. I have so many stories about us, you know, with our boat and our canoe, ice skating on it. The one winter that we made ice boats. And I love that story because it kind of talks about me and my brother Andy's personalities, because Andy could build anything and I was not good at building something. So we each went to try and build our own ice boat, and his was built very, very well, but didn't really work. Mine was built so poorly because I didn't take my time and I was lazy, but I had a really good idea for the sail. So creativity on my end, and talent or, you know, mechanical ability, skills with his hands, you know, for Uncle Andy. And we ended up putting our boats together. And I love that story. We took the sail from my boat and we put it on the bottom part of his boat, and it worked great. We would open up the sail and it would blow us all the way across the pond, and then we'd close the sail and pull the thing back to the other side and then do it again for hours. But to get back to the frogs, I feel like that was real. I really don't feel like I'm exaggerating, that these frogs were so big there. And we would go bullfrog hunting at night. Dad taught us how to do that, which is where you take a flashlight, you go out at night, and you hear the frog, so you walk up kind of close to them. You get as close as you can before you think they're going to jump away. And then right at the last second, you turn on your flashlight and you shine the light in their eyes. And then you have about 2 or 3 seconds to lean in, take that final step, and grab them. Because the light blinds them for just a second. So suddenly they're just hanging out in the middle of the night. Maybe they hear a sound, somebody walking up, so they're on the alert. Then all of a sudden, the brightest light they've ever seen in their entire frog lives happens. They can't see anything. They don't know what's going on. And one more noise, and they're like, "Maybe I should maybe get out of here." But then little kid's got his grubby little fingers around him, and it's too late. We caught a lot of frogs that first summer in that house, and they were the biggest frogs that I've ever seen before or since. Are you guys asleep yet? If you're not, I know your eyes are tired, and let's go ahead and close those eyes and fall all the way to sleep. Because I'm going to end up episode 1 here in a second. Thanks for listening. I didn't even get to all the stories I was going to tell, but I mean, probably from 0 to 10. I just hope for you guys that you look back on your 0 to 10 like I look back on mine. I hope that you get to be 33, and when you think about living on 78th Street and the big yard and Alexis and fun times with your brothers and sisters, and with Mom and Dad. I hope that you have a lot of happy memories like I do of when I was a kid. All right, thanks for listening to the first episode of Bedtime for Bricklies. I've been your host, and I will always be your dad. Good night.